All right. How you doing, Ritzy?
Hey, TGIF.
It is. Oh, man.
I'm so happy. So here we are in Building 22, which is a building that I was hired into like 12 years ago.
Wow.
And we are with, and I'm not going to even try and say it because I'll say it wrong.
Martha?
That's really hard.
Martha, yeah, that's a tough one.
Behar?
Behar, very good. My last name is Spanish, and the J is pronounced like an H, so Behar.
Got
All
it.
Right.
There we go.
Yes, and you are the vice president of?
So I run, in our company, the communication sector, and the communication sector is a group in sales and marketing that looks after service providers like AT&T, Vodafone, BT, those guys. As well as hosting companies like GoDaddy, Rackspace, and also media and entertainment, like Disney, News Corp, Pearson, are part of the group that we look into from a sales and marketing perspective.
Wow, so you run a very large team?
Our group is about 700 people.
Worldwide?
Worldwide. And our business is about $3 billion and growing. Very
right.
exciting because what we do in our organization is we sell to these service providers our IT technology, what we do in our company from an IT infrastructure solutions for their own consumption, right? Industry solutions for their own consumptions. But we're also building them as a channel to market for our software and our services. Mm-hmm. So I go to a Vodafone, for example, and I partner with them for them to resell our business productivity online. They become a huge channel for us. Or this is an organization that we're building the channel for the service provider to sell our PCs. As opposed to go to a traditional retailer, mm-hmm. you have an option to go to Vodafone and buy, for example, a broadband access line from them. And then at the end of that line, they put a PC that hopefully is Microsoft Windows PC. We're also working with them on media, on the media side with MSTV, our media room solution, as well as mobility. Mobility is huge, and I love that segment for us in the industry. So how do we build this channel to sell more Microsoft mobile devices?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last piece that is key is that with every single one of these customers, we go and we talk to them, and for them is how do I give my customer a connected experience that we allow them to carry the world with and access their world throughout any device, whether it's a mobile device, a phone, or whether it's your PC, or whether it's your TV. Just accessing that information through any device. And I don't want to sound arrogant, but Microsoft is really the company that can make this happen for these guys because we're so software rich and we're in TV and we are in mm-hmm. PCs and we're in phones. So Microsoft is the company that can really help them bring this together.
So is it a hard sell?
It's not a hard sell. It's harder landing it. You know, how do we execute on that? How do we bring the business groups together to make sure that as we develop the research and development part of this, that we bring our solutions together and then that go to market? Because remember, our customers are comfortable selling their traditional stuff. Now, suddenly you say to them, okay, well, you're now hosting Exchange or you're hosting SharePoint or something that is different. We have to train them. We have to transform that channel. So landing, the execution is the piece that I find that is the most difficult for us right now. Now, we're just at the very beginning, too, but I dream that this is going to be huge for us. And we're going through the growing pains, and then once we get models in place in the areas to execute, it's just a matter of letting the big machine go, so.
So you lead this group, you're at the helm, you're the vice president. What's a day in the life like for you? What are your actual like day-to-day responsibilities like?
Right. So my passion is sales, so I spend as much as I can in front of the customer. And I love to do that because our company is led by innovation. I like to hear that voice of the customer. These are the things that are working. And it's, for them, it's not so much about what we are creating. That's very important. But for them, it's also the business model. The business model changes. You know, how do I monetize what you're telling me, Martha? What is the business structure behind that is not a very traditional one? So for me, most of the time, I'm out in the field, in the trenches, with customers, with the sales organization, understanding what the masses in the organization are telling me regarding our strategy and where we're falling short or where we're excelling and so on. But when I'm here in Redmond, most of my time is spent with the business groups. It's equally important to understand what their goals are, where they're headed with their strategies. And then how do I help them fulfill and execute on those strategies as a sales and marketing arm for them? So we spend a lot of time, for example, in mobility with Andy Lee's team. He's creating all these strategies, and it's just a very rich opportunity for us. Well, I am his sales arm, so how do I execute on that flawlessly so that I get that pat in the back and not a choke on the neck?
Right.
So I spend a bit of time when I'm here in Redmond with the business groups understanding that, and, you know, how do we better align? How do we better align to execute? I think execution becomes key for us, and is at times where we fall short, so we need to pay incremental attention to that. Now, I start very early. Most of my days are either 4 or 5 in the morning with calls. I'm a morning person. After 9 o'clock, I'm worth a goose egg. But I start very early with calls, and my days are pretty packed. And that's the way that I like it, though, for the most part.
It sounds like you travel a lot as well.
I do. I would say that right now, it depends. Like, during mid-year process, I travel very little. But after mid-year, then it ramps up to 60-70% as much as I possibly can, especially towards the end of the year, where there's a lot of projects that need to be closed. And I say to my guys, listen, I take my pride, I pack it, I leave it in the plane, and I go to the customer, and whatever I can do to help us get that contract signed, I will absolutely help us drive. So I spend a lot of my time doing that.
So how long have you been at Microsoft?
It's going to be 2 years, June 4th. It seems like 2 decades to me. but it's been incredible. It's been a humbling experience as well. I've been in the telecommunications industry since 82. Mm-hmm. So I started with AT&T, then we went through the divestiture. I stayed with Bell South. Then I went to work for Nortel. And I was with AT&T for about 9 years, and then Nortel for 16 and a half, almost 17. And then I come to our company, and it's just a different business model, so much software. One of the things that I was challenged with is that our customers, the customer base that I look at, they continue to collapse their networks and their infrastructure, and they're looking for application services to put on top of that. When I was in Nortel, which is a great company, I always fell short of my story because, we didn't have those applications. Mm-hmm. And I thought, who is absolutely the best company in the universe from a software perspective, which is, again, at the risk of sounding too arrogant, is Microsoft. And Microsoft had an opportunity, and we talked about it, and the rest is history. So.
And you were hired in as a vice president?
I was. So I came in as a corporate VP for comm sector. And we had a program that it was onboarding. So I was meeting with other corporate VPs across the different segments, across the BGs, and so that I could get to know the folks better that help us execute on what we're doing in the comm sector and get a better alignment relationship going. So it was a pretty good program, the onboarding program.
I think that you're in the minority in that, in terms of our senior leadership at the company, being hired in at that level versus kind of starting at the entry level and kind of working their way up. Is that kind of different for you, or
it is?
Do you not share, like, because you don't share the 15,
history,
20 years exactly?
The history, right? So that's very true. One of the things that I'll tell you though is that I think a lot more the senior leadership team. Steve and the guys underneath are looking at a much more diverse organization and people coming from all different walks and ideas, and they actually actually want you to be to have a voice and to say, hey, listen, this is my experience. So they're really, really embracing this different diverse backgrounds because it makes our company a lot richer. So I found that working through that has been terrific. Now I also know that, these guys that are running our company today built the company from zero to 60 billion. So they have been at war, battles together. What they have lived together, I have not experienced. So there's a relationship there that brings them together that is beyond the business. Mm-hmm. And that to me is also very valuable because this is what has made Microsoft such a great company. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do I work with that?
Is that intimidating?
No. I think that our company, our culture, by the way, in general, is we go to meetings and we're critical. The glass is always half full. I don't think in an ungrateful or mean way, but we can be doing better and better and better, and I think that's very healthy. And so, you know, we go to these meetings, and we have discussions, and some are tough love discussions, but I think it's what makes our company move forward and look at things in a different way. And I think that in my discussions with the other corporate VPs, people listen. You know, hey, this is, she comes from a different world. She's not a Microsoft team from day one, but she has a different background, different opinion, and I think that's taken into account. But we do have those tough love discussions that I welcome as well. So
interesting. So let's go way back and let's talk about, you know, what did you go to school for? What did you study?
Okay. So my heritage is Cuban, and, you know, typical story, parents left Cuba because of Castro. And we actually, my parents left Cuba, and they actually went through South America. And I have three brothers, older brothers, and I was actually born in Colombia. And then from there we went to Venezuela, Miami, like all the Cubans that came to the States, and we settled in Miami. So my brothers, and I tell you about my brothers because they're key. My oldest brother is a PhD in civil engineering. The second guy is an architect. And the third one went to engineering school with me and my husband, who's my high school sweetheart, also an engineer. And the three of us graduated from engineering school together. I am an industrial engineer. And then one of my brothers, the one that is an engineer, became a doctor. And then my husband and I stayed in the engineering side of the business. And I started with a Bell Operating Company, hence my hard hat, because it keeps me grounded. It reminds me
where you came from,
where I came from, and in industrial engineering, my concentration was in operations research and statistical analysis. I loved math and I loved all of that stuff. So when I started with Bell South, that's what I was doing: taking, you know, engineering, the outside plan networks, doing statistical analysis around how we should engineer those networks, how much capacity to put in there, and I did that for a bit. Then I did central office cutovers, where we always wore hard hats as we were building these networks. And then from there, I went to Nortel. In Nortel, I went back to engineering, and I was running an engineering group in network designs. And then I went into R&D, and I ran the Voice over IP R&D group, and I did that for a bit. And then I went into sales and marketing. And that was it. It jumped out, it kissed me, and I said, this is my call in life, sales and operations and marketing, and I've stayed in the sales and marketing side of the business. My last job in Nortel was president of the Caribbean Latin American region, so I speak Spanish, obviously, my mother language, and I speak Portuguese, and I ran that business for Nortel, reporting to the CEO, Mike Seferovsky. And it was terrific. It was basically a regional job like we have in our company. And then from there, I joined Microsoft.
Why Microsoft?
Because of the software.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft is an incredible company. And one of the things that I'll tell you is that as I go and meet with customers, just the name Microsoft alone opens the door. You know, they might slap you around when you walk in sometimes. They might be upset. But at least you're there talking to them. You know, you have an opportunity to flush it out. So it's an incredible company, and it's a company that is very rich in innovation. I mentioned that it was a humble experience for me because of that. I come in here, and I had been in the industry for such a long time, and then I said to myself, gosh, I have so much to learn and catch up. And I spent the first 12 months of my time here doing that.
Wow. So, but you have a technical background. You're in sales and marketing now, but do you feel like that really helps bolster?
Absolutely. I think, and I work with the women at Microsoft here in our company. One of my biggest personal objectives is how do we promote the math and the sciences in, you know, with young girls, boys also, and it's very important that we do that effort across, you know, in our country. When I was graduating from high school, the government had a very big push around engineering and math and sciences, and I think we've lost our ways a little bit on that. So one of the activities that I do is try to, how do we promote that with young women? That diploma, that engineering or that technical diploma, whether it's engineering, computer science, you know, mathematics, that degree really opens a lot of doors for you as an individual. And then from there, you can either stay on the technical side or you can go into the business side of the business. But it opens, it gives you a lot of options. I also think that in the business, we've been trained from an engineering perspective to think very logically. Mm-hmm. And you tend to do that. You know, you tend to go back to you know, what is the logic? How is this customer thinking? You know, what value do I need to add to their P&L? What's the value proposition? It's not about making a sale, but it's about giving that customer an incredible experience so that he goes nowhere else. And so you start thinking like that. So I apply every day, you know, my background, my training, and the way that I approach the opportunity or the problem within, you know, within our customer base.
So let's talk a little bit about your experience as a woman and being a female in both your, before you joined Microsoft and Microsoft. So the number is growing, which is great for our senior leadership team here in terms of females. But still, it's a bit of a boys' club still. How do you feel about, you know, penetrating that and changing that and, you know, creating more role models like yourself for women who are coming up the ranks?
So we have, I think, as a company and in the United States, come a long way in terms of senior women in companies, but we're still not where we need to be. I think I was reading a statistics that senior roles in corporate America, women are represented, I think, still like at 4%. So it's still very low. Our company is doing a lot better in that regard, but it's still not where it needs to be. The reason that I tell you about my three brothers is because this is how I grew up. I grew up with my three brothers, and I've always been in a situation where it's been very male-dominated with them. And now I chose a career that is a male-dominated industry. It's a male-dominated career in engineering. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like a fish out of water. I mean, this is like business mm-hmm. as usual. But my job is to pave the road. I really strongly, to pave the road for other women so that they can stand on my shoulders and spring from that. I really do feel very passionate around building diverse organizations, whether it's gender or whether it's people of all generations or ethnic backgrounds. We have a customer base that is very diverse, mm-hmm. and therefore as a company,
yes,
we have to be equally diverse so that we can address the needs of that customer and that customer feels comfortable with what we're
that's
addressing.
Right.
So that's you know, hopefully one of my big deliverables in our company is to continue pushing that diversity angle into the different ranks, starting with me and my organization, and doing it not out of an obligation, but doing it out of the fact that it is business sense. This is not, okay, well, I'm going to do justice, social justice. It's not about that. It's about the performance of our business. And it is through very diverse organizations that I think that we will reach different heights in our company.
So what advice do you have for females who want to get into the business? And I think that what you would say is what you would say to a man as well. It's, you know, it's a meritocracy. You got to do a good job and all of that. But what about, it's more about like, when you're obviously in a room and you're the only female, for you and your family and where you came from, it was business as usual. But what about for a person who is not used to that and
right.
perhaps they're not the loudest person in the room or their approach or their style is very different from everyone else in the room?
I will tell you, Jennifer, the women and men are very different. There's just no doubt in my mind in every sense, you know, in the approach. One of the things, you know, I'll just give you a little example. In Nortel, I had a lot of women that were actually lawyers. You know, when a woman sits down, this is not to minimize our male colleagues, but you have to expand on the areas. Women command a lot more trust from the get-go. You know, it's just our approach. And we've gotta understand that. But my advice would be it is extremely important, because women and men are different, that you're always true to yourself, that you don't try to pretend to be someone that you're not just to fit in the crowd. It's very important that you don't deviate from who you are as a woman and as a professional. Even if you are more emotional, that's okay. Let them have an opinion. But at the end of the day, I think that the guys will work with you and they will embrace that. There will be challenges, no doubt. But, you know, it also goes the other way around. And I think, you know, the guys are equally as challenged in many other different ways. I don't think it's about a woman and a man thing. I think it's more around how the team works together and how we don't think about, well, what are the areas of development, how we say what are the strengths and how do we blow up those strengths so we can be even stronger in the way that we approach the business. My one advice is be true to yourself. Don't pretend to be someone that you're not to fit in the crowd. That's absolutely the wrong thing because then you will fail.
So since 82, when you started your career, did you ever have any situations or incidents that were, you know, obviously very, just, you know, they were discriminating against you or you had to fight against? Or was there any learning lessons or things that you think back to now, like that you wish that had gone differently, that are milestones for you in your career?
I think, so just let me just talk a little bit about milestones. What has always worked for me as a professional woman in the industry is that I've never been afraid to charter into waters that are not familiar. In fact, my personal philosophy, and it doesn't work with everyone, but my personal philosophy is whenever I'm comfortable with something, it's time to do something different. Whenever I'm comfortable with my job, it's time to push it to the next level or it's time to do something different. That change, I think, is very healthy. I had, you know, I would say comical situations. You know, I'll give you an example. I was managing a construction group, the people that build networks in Bell South, and I must have been 21, 22 years old. And this is in South Florida, and I had designed the network, and there's cable that goes into these things called manholes. And you see the manholes in the street, they have these lids that are very heavy. Mm-hmm. Underneath those manholes, you have all of the cable that goes through the city, and there's conduit that connects one manhole to the other. So we were looking at these manholes and the splices connecting the cables. And in Florida, we have a thing called mangrove gas. There's a tree that is a mangrove, and they secrete a gas. And you have to pump the gas out of the manhole before you can actually go in there. And one of the construction guys, actually with his index fingers, he pulled off the manhole lid. And him and I are talking as he's pumping this gas out, and we're going in there to take a look at this cable. And I said to him, hey, so what are you doing for Memorial Weekend? And he said, well, me and my Harley are going down to the Keys. Now, I had grown up in a very sheltered environment, you know, with my brothers and my mom. My dad had passed away, so my world literally had been them. And I said, was Harley your wife? And he goes, no, Harley Davidson, don't you know who that is? So needless to say, all of these guys that work for me would call me Harley. They never call me Martha.
Of course.
So I think that's one of the things that I think about in terms of my career that I thought, geez, you know, with the guys and everybody there had motorcycles. I wish I would have known more about motorcycles than I did. Mm-hmm. So...
So what's the hardest thing about your job? What's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge, I would say, the communication sector from a sell with perspective, so building this channel to market of our software and services, is new to us. So it's not only on the execution piece that I talked about, but it's internally getting the alignment and the belief that I have that this market is going to be, God willing, as big as, you know, our PC market, for example, that is different. That is, you know, you look at these customers, and these customers have incredible attributes. You know, they have billing relationships with over 5 billion people. Our company has billing relationship with one. They own the access, so that broadband access, wired and wireless, is theirs. They have an incredible brand that, you know, that together would be incredible for an AT&T and a Microsoft, Vodafone and a Microsoft to come together. And they also have a very strong customer care system. So because of those attributes, we need to build this channel. And it's getting the alignment. It's a big company. A lot of people touch the customer, and it's channelizing all that effort and energy in a way that makes sense for our customer. I think they tell me, Martha, what it feels like is that, you know, you guys are throwing a lot of things to see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, there's no rhyme and reason. So taking our strategy and executing on that and getting the alignment. You look at the comms sector, and these guys serve as consumers, and we have a big consumer play in our company, not necessarily through them. These guys service small, medium enterprises, and we have an incredible channel machine in our company that services them, not necessarily through them, and then enterprises. So the question is, how do we take all that effort and make it in a way that is successful for them and hopefully more business for us as another channel to market? And that's the hardest part internally, getting that alignment right now. But it's fine. Little by little, we're bringing them over, so it's just a matter of time. We've got to prove in the results, obviously, and but you know, the times are fun for us as we transform that in our company. So
I'm curious, because Charles and I are in an evangelism group that's really focused on early adoption. So we're looking at the next version of the products across the platform, and so we're trying to get people to get excited about, you know, stuff that's not even ready. Not even, you know, available. There may not even be a business model, and you're just trying to probably get them on the current platform. So, how do you rationalize that?
So, because I have so much to work from right now that is real, then that's my priority. You know, once we are in there, and think of it like a socket. You know, we get a socket, and then from there we can build it. If we nail programs with these guys where they resell our business productivity online. They resell PCs for us. They resell our unified communications. They become a great customer of ours from a live perspective. If we do all of that, now we have a very strong platform, mobility, a strong platform that they can then, the stuff that you guys are looking at, we will put on top of that from applications perspective and bring that together for them. But the basics is to get those platforms in there so that we can then build on what you guys are creating for these customers. And all of them are asking, you know, what is it that you're going to give me that is unique? Because, you know, AT&T will compete with Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that, you know, you'll give me that will be different than the other guy? And it is through the evangelism and, you know, what we're doing with DPE, that we can work with developers and give them applications that we will be unique for them. Their customer base, as opposed to another carrier. But first, we got to get that in there.
That's
get
right.
The basics in.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the like biggest challenges with getting the basics in? I mean, when you go meet with another VP for unnamed company, what are some of the things they put on the table right now? Here's what we don't like about Microsoft.
It's normally the business model, not really on the
licensing or.
Right, so from an enterprise agreement perspective, we have that. You know, we have our licensing agreements. I mean, we know how to do that. Pedal to the metal, mm-hmm. It keeps the lights on. We know how to do that. But as we partner with them to sell our software to their customer base, that business model is different. It's not an enterprise agreement. It's not what we are. It's not our comfort zone.
Right.
So it's working through what those business models look like. Mm-hmm. How do they make money? Mm-hmm. And then how do we make money out of that? That become a lot more challenging in our discussions. That business model is the toughest part. And then once we have that business model, Charles, is how do we execute? Because what these guys are expecting is that we help them in sales and marketing, in building demand, in executing. And we're challenged with that go-to-market because we don't know what we don't know. So it's building that execution piece that is also very challenging for us.
So I'm curious, like when Microsoft has an annual executive retreat and all the VPs come together, it sounds like you spend a lot of time with other like business and marketing VPs like Andy Lees, but, you know, do you take advantage of those opportunities to get a hold of the product group VPs and talk to them about, you know, how
Absolutely.
You can rationalize the business a bit?
Absolutely. You know, one thing that I'll tell you that I did when I joined Microsoft, my strategy, and in hindsight I would do it differently, my strategy was I was going to spend time out in the field with customers just so that I could see how customers were feeling about us in the comm sector. And I thought, you know, spend time with the guys that are carrying that, you know, bag, that one face, one bag into the customer from Microsoft to understand their sales motions, et cetera. I spent very little time here. And I underestimated the power of the product guys that are holding the W-2. You know,
That's
these guys
right.
are investing from an R&D perspective. So any opportunity I get, I spend time with them. In terms of the product development, what we need to do, understanding what are their challenges and how I can help them, mm-hmm. you know.
Because I think because we are an engineering company, first and foremost, that's our history, that's our DNA, that sometimes we build really cool products and technology before we ever really think about
how
the monetization and the business model. And I think sometimes it's hard to fit those together.
Because our company is truly innovation-led, which is not necessarily bad. But I'll tell you, the business groups, the more time I spent with them, the more they want to understand the voice of the customer. You know, Martha, what are they thinking? How do we align? So we see a bit of that now, I think, more than ever. The other thing that is terrific is they go through their strategy piece at the end of the fiscal year, so, you know, October, November, and then we take that, and then from there we build our mid-year. And I think that there's a much closer alignment than I've ever seen before.
Good.
So, yeah, but we still have work to do, no doubt. And a lot of those guys are out in the field with me. It's just terrific, you know, that I call them, hey, listen, I beg them, would you come and meet with a customer? I need to turn them around. They're thinking of going with Google Apps. And, you know, like, you know, a great example is Dave Thompson, who is, you know, running our BPOS, and he's incredibly supportive. He tells me I'm a stalker, so let that be on record.
In a good way.
So I tell him, I need your help, and he's out there with customers. And that carries a lot of weight, because he is the guy that does the development. He is the guy that does those deliverables.
Right.
And customers want to hear from the Dave Thompsons of this world. And you know, and I love that. I love that support. So
that's great.
Interesting.
Charles?
Well, I was just going to say, get Windows Mobile team to fix their, you know, how many times do you have to remind me? Anyway, just playing. I love Windows Mobile. So one thing I wanted to go back, you made a comment about, we ask this question all the time of all of our interviewees. You know, why aren't there more women in this field to begin with? You know, and secondly, if there aren't female math teachers and physics teachers, don't you think it begins, the lack of mentorship and relationship ends there? For example, when I was in high school, my math teachers were football coaches, and my football coach was my math teacher. I can't imagine that relationship with the girls in the class, it just must have come off as strange, and they look at this kind of big guy teaching math. I mean, my point is, I'm trying to ask the question, it's one thing to say, let's get more girls interested in math, let's get more women math teachers. Can we help in that, Microsoft? Can we help invest in that?
So, and Microsoft actually is, but it does begin with building that pipeline. So you have to build the pipeline and the interest with girls, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. The math and the sciences is fun. So we have to have a lot of effort around that. Our company does a lot of outreach programs like Dizzy Girls, for example, and we do mentorship with girls. That allows for that. It exposes them to the fun aspect of the math and the sciences.
Not nerdy or geeky.
Right,
or,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. Now, we also have a lot of effort with young boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have to build that pipeline, Charles. And it is the reason that you see not too many women in the industry is because we don't have a very big pipeline either. Across the board, graduating from engineering schools. I think our company still, we have a lot of work to do because from a market perspective, we're probably lower than the market. You know, I was talking to one of our PhDs a couple of days ago, and she gave me statistics that math doctorates out of universities is like 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And we're nowhere near 20% doctors in mathematics here in our company. So obviously we have some work to do in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that the activities that I see Microsoft undertaking in diversity, I think are pretty strong, and I think our company is very focused. There's always room for improvement, but you know, through the leadership that Lisa's bringing in, there's a lot of activity across the board. We all have to get involved. You mm-hmm. have to be involved. You have to be. It's something that we as employees of our company have a responsibility. How do I help?
Mm-hmm.
How do I mentor a girl? How do I get involved in mentorship with girls and boys?
Mm-hmm.
And going into the math and the sciences, it's not geeky, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. I have two little boys, almost, that almost is important, almost 8 and almost 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it is my hope that they go into the math and the sciences. I'm not going to jam this down their throat, but, you know, hopefully through, like, I play games with them, and my games are normally, okay, let's, you have a choice. Let's talk about, you have a choice. I'll ask you a question on math, science, or translation. And translation is from English to Spanish, because I want them to learn Spanish. And they normally do not pick translations, by the way. They stick to the older boy, to the science, the little guy, to the math. And I think that we have to work like that and help our children understand that this is really a lot of fun. And that give a different perception around it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This
no,
is
you're
terrific.
Busy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the alarm in the background, but
that's okay.
That's
he's got a jam-packed day.
We're signing contracts as we close the year.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's terrific to meet you guys.
Absolutely. Good all luck. Right.
Thanks.
Close
Thank
those
you.
Deals.
Close the deals.
A closer right here.
A closer.